Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we've got lots to talk about on this beautiful weekend. I hope you're doing something healthy on your own behalf. At least you're listening to an hour or so of Intelligent Medicine. That'll boost your health quotient. 888-302-3684 is our number, and we've got a lot of stuff to tackle on this weekend edition of Intelligent Medicine. We're going to be talking a little bit about the Robin Williams suicide and how his health condition may have contributed to his ultimate demise. And we'll also talk about competitive chess. It can be dangerous. Two players die at a world chess event in Norway just held recently. 888-302-3684. And before we get to your phone calls and to the news of the week, we got lots to cover today. Let's talk a little bit about a new program that is debuting on Cinemax. I know it's premium TV and some of you don't subscribe. So I'll review it for you. The new show is called The Nick, and it's spelled K-N-I-C-K. I guess it's a little bit of a play on words because it's about surgery in the year 1900. And the Nick is short for Knickerbocker, which was one of the big hospitals in New York around that time. This is a series that has now been booked for 20 episodes. Director Steven Soderbergh is at the helm. He's famous for movies like Aaron Brockovich and Ocean's 11. And recently he did Behind the Candelabra for HBO with Matt Damon and Michael Douglas. He also has some experience doing medically themed TV shows and movies. His latest movie, 2011, was Contagion, which is a scary movie, kind of about, horror scenario of an epidemic, kind of like Ebola, but worse because it kills about three-quarters of the world's population. And he also is famous, of course, for Grey's Anatomy, a series that went on, seemed like forever. And now he goes back, about 114 years to 1900, and the series stars Clive Owen as a doctor in a major metropolitan hospital in New York City. And he's an unlikely protagonist. I saw the first episode. He is a misogynist, racist, cocaine-addicted, prostitute-frequenting doctor. But he's a damn good doctor. It's sort of like a 1900 version of House. You know, his bedside manner ain't too great, but he's dead on when he gets into the operating room. And he gets into the zone of performing surgery, and he's an innovative surgeon. He comes up with all new techniques because in those days they're making it up on the fly. They didn't know what to do, and they had a lot of freedom to innovate. And this character is roughly patterned after a guy named Halsted. Halsted was a surgeon around that time who was a pioneering surgeon in America. And Halsted was very different, actually, in personality. He was very shy. He was a workaholic kind of guy. But he had very few vices. So this guy, a little more colorful version of Halsted. And you know, this show is extremely gory. It starts out with a scene, and there's no spoiler alert here because if you watch it, you're going to see this right away. It starts out with a scene where a woman comes in for a C-section, and they slice open the belly. And just make sure you're not eating when you watch this because the blood's pouring out, and it's very realistic. And a lot of people who've watched it say they have to turn away from the screen. They just can't watch it. But I have to say, you know, I have no problem with it because I am inured to it. I went through medical training. I spent hours watching and assisting surgery So I don't have a yuck factor when it comes to blood and gore. You know, does a jet fighter pilot get sick on a roller coaster ride? Well, I don't when I watch surgery being performed on TV, however bloody. And what's kind of weird in this is that all the surgery is done barehanded. So they reach into the guts of people with their bare hands, and they sew and they cut and they reach in with clamps and instruments, and at least the show is realistic to a certain point. There's some technical problems with the show which I'll address. I mean, they show that they're at least attempting to use some sterile technique. They use clean sheets. They boil the instruments. They administer anesthesia with gas, so at least the patients are not screaming. It's 1900 after all. They introduced ether as a way of anesthetizing patients. But what was kind of a funny scene in the first episode was that the surgeons scrub. They scrub very carefully, but after the operation, not before, because they're all covered with blood. They've reached, up to their elbows into somebody's abdomen, and they're all bloody, and they spend a lot of time cleaning off the blood rather than cleaning themselves before surgery. They hadn't yet thought of gloves. So, what's the deal here? Is this historically accurate? Well, I did a little research on the history of aseptic surgery. And actually, it was back in 1843, about 55 years before this show takes place at the Nick Hospital in New York, that Oliver Wendell Holmes, a pioneering doctor in Boston, made a presentation on the contagiousness of something called puerperal fever, which is the fever that occurs in women after delivery because they were using dirty instruments and dirty hands, and the cleanliness of the doctor caused a lot of women to get infections and even die. A Hungarian doctor named Semmelweis made about the same discovery in Vienna in 1947, but he was ridiculed. He required his students to wash their hands, but it was actually considered sort of like a badge of courage for doctors to have bloody, pus-stained cloaks. And they basically wore their street clothes and used their bare hands, and they barely washed their hands before surgery. So Semmelweis tried to encourage this. He was hounded out of practice, and he died in an insane asylum. So years later, Joseph Lister published the groundbreaking paper Antiseptic Principle of the Practice of Surgery, and he used carbolic acid, also known as phenol, to spray instruments and wounds, and he made surgeons wash their hands before and after operations with a solution. So then surgeons started to wear gloves, and nurses started to wear gloves, but not because of antiseptic considerations. Their hands were getting burned with the phenol. That's a very caustic substance. So they started wearing gloves. Finally, Halsted, the surgeon after whom this fictional character, his name is Dr. Thackeray, is modeled, began using gloves. But he started doing it in the 1890s. So if this series, The Nick, is going to be historically accurate, at some point in the evolution of the series, he's going to get the idea that he better start wearing gloves and his patients will stop dying. Dr. Halsted didn't start wearing gloves himself at first. That's accurate. They were used by nurses and assistants, but rarely by the doctors, except for open bone and joint operations, where literally you could get your hands cut on the jagged surfaces of broken bones. And so finally, they realized by 1899, a year before the series is supposed to start, the Nick, the Cinemax series, they published a report on 450 hernia operations. There was a near 100% drop in the infection rate just by using gloves. So Halsted himself was quoted as saying, "Why was I so blind not to have perceived the necessity for wearing them all the time?" And so we hope that this series develops. I mean, look, I got to say, it's fun. You get to see what New York used to look like, what hospitals used to look like. I love historical period pieces. And there's some insights into what medicine was like back in the year 1900. So check it out if you can. If you're interested in medicine, turn your head away from the gory scenes, because there's plenty of gore. That's why you pay big bucks for premium TV, because there's sex, gore, violence. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, 888-302-3684, if you want to get into the conversation. We're here to answer your questions. This is Intelligent Medicine.
Why do I use Clear Sinus Care? Because I like to breathe.
Because I hate having a dry nose.
There are a lot of reasons to use Clear Sinus Care, the nasal rinse and sinus spray with xylitol. But the best reason is because it works.
I use Clear because my doctor told me to.
Because it's all natural.
Clear, spelled X-L-E-A-R, moisturizes and soothes those dry and irritated sinuses. Clear Sinus Care not only helps with dry air problems, it also helps wash away pollens, pollutants, and other airborne contaminants, making your sinus passageways all clear.
Because my snoring was keeping my wife awake.
Because now I'm not all stuffed up.
And because it's all natural, Clear is 100% safe for children. The perfect way to keep your whole family healthy and breathing right. Prevent the misery and stop the suffering with Clear. That's X-L-E-A-R at clear.com and fine retailers.
Available at Whole Foods, Vitamin Shoppe, and other fine natural products retailers.
Did you know that doctors recommend omega-3 essential fatty acids for kids and grown-ups alike? Nordic Naturals, the number one fish oil in the U.S., offers omega-3s for everyone. In fact, Nordic Naturals has one of the largest product portfolios in the world. Our best-selling Ultimate Omega is available in soft gels or liquid, both with a light, clean lemon flavor and no fishy aftertaste. This concentrated formula has been clinically shown to support heart health. For children, kids everywhere love Nordic Naturals Children's DHA, offered in great-tasting strawberry liquid or chewable soft gels. New Omega Boost is a creamy, delicious formulation of omega-3s. With its great mango taste and velvety smooth texture, Nordic Naturals Omega Boost is a great choice for the whole family. Nordic Naturals carefully manages every step of production of our omega-3 fish oils from boat to bottle, so you can count on Nordic Naturals to be exceptionally pure, fresh, and effective. Nordic Naturals, for kids and grown-ups alike. Available at natural products retailers or online at nordicnaturals.com.
drhoffman.com, your portal for cutting-edge information on health and nutrition.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Big story this week, the death of Robin Williams. It took us all by surprise, the just wild and zany comedian. It's so out of character that he would descend into such a deep depression that he would take his own life. But some reflections on his medical circumstances may shed light on what prompted him to take his own life. Well, first, you know, there's some speculation about his personal circumstances that he was, well, he made a lot of money. There was some kind of cash flow situation. He was strapped for funds. He had to finance alimonies and take care of kids. And he was a little cash-strapped. He took on a lot of projects, which are very exhausting for him. And also his series, his short-lived series on one of the major networks, was canceled. So a lot of personal circumstances coming together. Plus, just the freneticism that he brought to his performances. It's just got to be exhausting to sustain that pace of activity. And when you age, it becomes harder. And, the whole thing in performing, I sometimes feel like I'm only as good as my last act. Each and every show, each and every podcast is a challenge to maintain the same level of excellence, the high standards that I have to live up to. So I get it about performance. And the other thing that was going on is there was this issue of addiction and rehab. And often addiction is a sign of depression when you have the wrong kind of brain chemistry and you need to stimulate your brain with outside substances. This can be a sign of a biochemical imbalance that needs to be addressed with whatever, cocaine, alcohol, even frenetic activity. This is something that workaholism. This is something that relates to an underlying imbalance in brain chemistry. A lot of great people are a little bit, they can be a little manic depressive. They perform great artistic feats during times when they're high, and then when things settle down, they feel very empty and depressed. But also, drug addiction and alcohol addiction can change the brain and leave you more prone to worsening depression once you're in sobriety. And it's particularly the case with cocaine, because cocaine, in the aftermath of cocaine use, amphetamine use, you can feel very flat when confronted with reality. Alcoholics have the same challenge every day. They take it one day at a time, but each day is a challenge to meet the circumstances, sometimes the banality of daily life, without being intoxicated. So this is, you know, something that was in his personal history. But I think the most interesting revelation is that he'd just been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. And being diagnosed with a serious progressive disease is depressing in and of itself. There's a sense of, oh, my goodness, you know, look how I'm going to end up. Although many patients with Parkinson's disease, certainly patients under my care, have long and productive lives, and they can improve with the right kind of care, the right combination of medications and nutraceuticals, the right kind of dietary approach. Sometimes we use hormonal therapy. In men, testosterone helps mood in patients with Parkinson's disease. But Parkinson's disease, very high incidence of depression associated with Parkinson's, not just because you got a bad diagnosis, but because it's a brain disorder. And yes, it affects movement, but other parts of the brain associated with mood are often involved in Parkinson's disease. So we offer condolences to the family and share in the national sense of loss at the departure of this very, very prolific person, really part of all our lives. We all grew up with Robin Williams, true comic genius. All right, this is an interesting item that comes to us from Norway, where they have just held the Chess Olympiad, which is an interesting event. It's the most prestigious international tournament in chess, at which the world's top players compete alongside amateurs to win honors for their country. So they're teams from all over the world. Headline, two players die at world chess event in Norway. What's up with that? Well, it's not funny. A Swiss-born member of the Seychelles team. The Seychelles is a small island chain in the Indian Ocean. Kurt Meyer, age 67, collapsed on Thursday afternoon during his final match of the marathon two-week contest. And despite immediate medical attention to the scene, he died later in the hospital. Apparently, they tried to defibrillate him right at the chessboard. And he succumbed during this vast hall of people playing chess. Hours later, a player from Uzbekistan was found dead in his hotel room. They are not treating the death as suspicious. We regard these as tragic but natural deaths. So what's up with that? I mean, is it the stress of playing chess? Chess involves a lot of concentration. There's these marathon games. They play match after match after match. It can be exhausting and cause a certain amount of tension. But, it occurs to me, what about chess doping? Well, there are rules under which they test chess players for drugs that could be performance-enhancing drugs. Now, we're not talking about anabolic steroids that make you lift more weights or run faster, but they're actually drugs and medication that are medications that can enhance mental performance and concentration. And, you know, I can't ever remember reading about Garry Kasparov having to pee into a bottle at a chess match. But I came across this blog from a guy who claims to have experimented with performance-enhancing drugs. He played 10 chess games clean on chess.com. He lost 8 and won 2. And then he used, quote, performance-enhancing drugs. He used temazepam, which is a benzodiazepine. He says he lost most of his games. Dexedrine was performance-enhancing. Amphetamine seemed to help. MDMA, the love drug.
Why do I use the Spry Dental Defense System? Because it tastes great.
Because fillings are ugly.
There are a lot of reasons to use the Spry Dental Defense System, a complete line of oral care products such as toothpaste, mouthwash, gum, mints, and more, made with 100% xylitol. But the best reason is because it works. And because it's all natural, Spry is 100% safe for kids. There are even Spry products developed especially for your children and toddlers.
Because my dental hygienist told me to.
Because it's all natural.
So ask for Spry by name whenever you buy toothpaste, mouthwash, gum, mints, or anything else for your mouth. And make sure you're receiving all the benefits of 100% xylitol products.
Because I want a great smile, duh. Why do I use Spry? Because it works?
The Spry Dental Defense System. Great taste, less fillings. For information or to purchase Spry, visit SpryDental.com.
Available at Whole Foods, Vitamin Shoppe, and other fine natural products retailers.
For more intelligent medicine, download our free podcast at drhoffman.com.
Back to Intelligent Medicine, Dr. Ronald Hoffman here. My comments got a little truncated at the bottom of the hour due to a hard break, so let me repeat what this guy did in relationship to exploring the effects of drugs on chess performance. I think it's interesting. This guy, and he's an anonymous blogger who plays chess. He played his first 100 games on chess.com under the influence of a variety of drugs in a carefully controlled scientific experiment. So first he played the first 10 games clean on no drugs, and he lost the preponderance of games. He was 2-8. In the next 10, he used alcohol, a 30-year-old Glenfiddich Scotch whiskey, and he did better. He only lost 6 out of 10. And then he took temazepam, which is a benzodiazepine, and he lost 9 out of 10 games, and he said he couldn't even remember the games. Then he took dexedrine, which is an amphetamine, and he actually did better. He won 7 out of 10 games. Then he took mescaline, which is a hallucinogen, but I don't know, maybe it just enabled him to think ahead to all those complex moves. 6-4. Better than just, you know, plain sober. Then he took the love drug, MDMA, went 5-5. And then he took Rohypnol, which is a powerful anesthetic drug that's popular as a street drug. He lost 8 out of 10. So there you go. In terms of performance enhancement for chess, I mean, who knows? Maybe they need to do evaluation of the drug and alcohol content in some of these guys who died at this chess tournament because, I don't know, maybe they're using speed. All right. I'd like to share listener comments. This is a nice one from one of our Facebook followers. Check us out on Facebook because I post a lot of the articles that I talk about here on this program on Facebook. You can follow me there. Hi, Dr. H. This one's from Gretel. It's been a while since I've been on Facebook. I don't know if you remember, but we had a few chats about your being an inspiration to me for going back to nursing school. Well, I just wanted you to know I finished and just found yesterday I passed the nursing board. I'm thrilled and, of course, nervous, too. I think it's going to be so rewarding to help people, and I also realize it will be very tough. Thanks for being a great inspiration. I think I started listening to you back in 2006 when I was diagnosed with celiac, and my doctor at the time wanted me to start Lipitor. And so this is a person who actually saw. Her name is Gretel, and it's great that I made an impression on Gretel so that she began to pursue a medical career. We love giving people inspiration. All right, this time of year, it's summer. And if it's summer, lots of people are spending time in the sun. And, you know, we just love to spend time in the sun. And in fact, it is thought that some people who go to tanning booths are literally addicted to tanning. What's up with that? Well, we know that sun and ultraviolet rays increase vitamin D levels throughout the body. And that may feel good for some people because vitamin D is a bit of a natural antidepressant. But it's not just limited to the effect of raising vitamin D in the body. New studies suggest that sunbathing may boost endorphins in the body and brain. They did research on mice, and they found that mice produce feel-good molecules in response to regular exposure to ultraviolet light. And last time I checked, you know, mice do not get a suntan. They got hair all over their bodies, but they get more than a tan. Ultraviolet light causes mice to churn out an opiate-like molecule. That's the runner's high molecule, endorphins. Scientists report in a recent edition of the medical journal Cell. Sounds like a very, very highfalutin. It's about the cell. This feel-good molecule called beta-endorphin may explain why some people seem addicted to tanning. It also may explain why people are generally drawn to sunny spots. And hey, guess, you know, when you're living up in like Windsor, Ontario, or if you live in Seattle and it's just gloomy and gray and cold, and there's just the point where you say, I can't take anymore. I got to hop on a plane and I got to go to Cancun, or I got to go down to, Bermuda and get my dose of sun. So, look, it's mice, but researchers believe the same beta endorphin production described in mice may well be what impels humans to seek out sun. And what was that Denver song, that John Denver song? Sunlight on my shoulder makes me happy. Sorry about that rendition, but he nailed it. There's something about sunlight that makes people happy. All right, this item is for dog owners. And, you know, we don't generally do a lot of veterinary stuff, pet stuff, but when it has implications for us as people, pet ownership, we know, helps people live longer, makes people happier. It's nice to have an adoring pet put his head in your lap, lick you, greet you happily in a non-judgmental way when you get home from work. You know, you have conflict on the outside, but animals just, they give you unconditional love. All right. This is a study done in Scotland. And what they found was that among pet owners, physical activity is actually enhanced by pet ownership. That's a big duh, because dogs demand to be walked. And even in the coldest, most inclement weather, and you don't feel like going out, you got to take the dog out. And that involves a little bit of additional exercise. So the researchers showed that dog owners were found to be 12% more active than non-dog owners. So the conclusion, this is a brilliant conclusion. How do they arrive at, I mean, they're such geniuses. Dog ownership is associated with physical activity in later life. Duh. And they, but this is a, like, scientific, science speak. Interventions to increase activity among older people might usefully attempt to replicate elements of the dog ownership experience. Well, how are you going to replicate elements of the dog ownership experience except with maybe a dog robot? There's nothing like a dog. So why try to replicate elements of the dog owner experience? Just get a dog. You know, that should suffice. All right, it'll increase your level of physical activity by 12%, and that's all good. Maybe generate some endorphins, feel-good hormones as well. 888-302-3684 if you care to call in with questions. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
If you're like me, balancing my blood sugar is important to me for my health and wellness, especially as I get older. I pay attention to what I eat and try to exercise daily, but even that might not be enough. So each day I take Kyolic Blood Sugar Balance in conjunction with a healthy diet, regular exercise, and plenty of rest. Kyolic Blood Sugar Balance is my trusted ally for healthy weight management, overall cardiovascular health, and immune function. Kyolic Blood Sugar Balance is a synergistic combination of odorless Kyolic aged garlic extract and herbs and nutrients shown to help maintain blood sugar levels. And it's made by our friends at Kyolic, the number one best-selling odorless garlic supplement on the market for over 40 years. So join the Kyolic team. I did.
Kyolic Blood Sugar Balance is available at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, GNC, and fine health food stores everywhere.
We all know that humans need probiotics, but your dog needs probiotics too. Some dogs have chronic digestive issues just like humans. Probiotics will aid digestion and help improve overall immune health. Hi, I'm Gail Pruitt, certified nutritionist and author of the Doggone Good Cookbook. I do nutritional research for both humans and canines, focusing primarily on digestive issues. So whether your dog has chronic digestive issues or just the occasional upset, I recommend that you give your dog a daily probiotic to balance your dog's gut flora. You know, eating right and taking the right supplements are so important for your good health and for your best friends. And the best probiotics I've found is Dr. O'Hara's probiotics. So make sure the nutrients you and your dog eat are providing the maximum benefits. And always share your Dr. O'Hara's probiotics. Your dog will love you for it.
Discover the Dr. O'Hara difference. Dr. O'Hara's probiotics are available at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, and other fine health food stores nationwide.
A regular dose of intelligent medicine injected directly into your inbox. Subscribe to Dr. Hoffman's free newsletter. Just go to drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Interesting, you just mentioned our newsletter. This week, just by total coincidence, we didn't plan it this way, but the column by Layla Mudin, our Hoffman Center nutritionist, is about nutritional supplements for weight loss. And, oh, by the way, my podcast of the week, my clinical focus podcast, I evaluate all the weight loss products, things like Garcinia Cambogia, raspberry ketones, EGCG from green tea, and so on and so on, Capsiate Natura, which is a derivative of non-spicy chili. We talk about those and evaluate those. So check it out. Check out our newsletter, subscribe, or go to drhoffman.com. All right, vitamin E. Vitamin E controversial because some studies show recently that vitamin E doesn't help cardiovascular disease, that it may even increase the risk of cancer. So it's kind of a conundrum. We know vitamin E in a dietary from the standpoint of dietary intake is very beneficial, but what happens when we supplement with vitamin E? Maybe something different. But here's an answer. It comes to us from Rutgers University. There's studies suggesting that vitamin E actually increases the risk of cancer, says Chung S. Yang, director of the Center for Cancer Prevention Research at Rutgers. Our message, he says, is that the vitamin E form of gamma-tocopherols, the most abundant form of vitamin E in the American diet, and delta-tocopherols, also found in vegetable oils, are beneficial in preventing cancers, while the form of vitamin E, alpha-tocopherol, the most commonly used in vitamin E supplements, has no such benefit. So that may explain, you know, the research is often based on alpha-tocopherol vitamin E. And that is the problem. Now, I have to say, for at least the last 8-10 years, I've urged that people take mixed tocopherols, not alpha tocopherol, and I've gone to pains to include mixed tocopherols in our multivitamin, which is foundation formula. And when people are given vitamin E at the Hoffman Center, it's a gamma tocopherol rich vitamin E. So if this is true, I've been on the right track. Rutgers scientists conducting animal studies for colon, lung, breast, and prostate cancer found that the forms of vitamin E in vegetable oils, gamma and delta tocopherols, prevent cancer formation and growth in animal models. When animals are exposed to cancer-causing substances, the group that was fed these tocopherols, that is gamma and delta, in their diet had fewer and smaller tumors. And when cancer cells were injected into mice, these tocopherols also slowed down the development of tumors. So in another study, it was found that the delta tocopherol form of vitamin E was more effective than other forms of vitamin E in suppressing the development of colon cancer in rats. So the problem is that Some research suggests the alpha tocopherol may actually somewhat increase the risk of this disease among men. And that's why, according to Dr. Yang, who heads the Center for Cancer Prevention and Research at Rutgers, that it's important to distinguish between the different forms of vitamin E and conduct more research on its cancer preventive and other biological effects. He says, for people who think that they need to take vitamin E supplements, taking a mixture of vitamin E that resembles what is in our diet would be the most prudent supplement to take. So the vitamin E that, you know, if you go to drhoffman.com and you shop there and you look for vitamin E, you will find a gamma tocopherol rich form of mixed tocopherols, which include the delta, some alpha. But it's actually postulated that if you take too much alpha, that the alpha blocks out the gamma, thus maybe increasing risk rather than decreasing risk as we'd like to see. So think mixed tocopherols when you're dosing vitamin E, and that you know, may also apply to the cardiovascular preventive effects, the Alzheimer's preventive effects, because high doses of vitamin E in recent studies have been shown to dramatically increase functionality in patients who are suffering from dementia and Alzheimer's disease. The dose, 2,000 international units. And actually, I got to admit, that study was done with alpha tocopherol. So imagine if we use a mixed tocopherol, which is safer and potentially superior, what we could achieve in terms of slowing down dementia as our population ages. All right, lots more coming up in the next hour. What you can look forward to is we're going to talk about salt. We're going to talk about our efforts to reduce salt consumption in America misguided. Are we going over the top? Also, we'll talk garlic, specifically aged garlic extract, and a remarkable new study suggesting that it is very beneficial in slowing the progression of plaque. Dr. Ronald Hoffman here, Intelligent Medicine.
For more Intelligent Medicine, download our free podcast at drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Next hour, we're going to talk about Canada and the yeast connection. But some people tell me that they can't control their sweet cravings, and they blame it on the Canada. They say the Canada made me do it. And that sounds really ridiculous. But I just came across this intriguing article entitled, "Is Eating Behavior Manipulated by the Gastrointestinal Microbiota?" In other words, is it not your fault you're fat? Is your gut, are the organisms that inhabit your gastrointestinal tract commanding you to eat more? And it's very intriguing theory, because microbes in the gastrointestinal tract, they say, are under selective pressure to manipulate host eating behavior to increase their fitness. In other words, if they want sugar, they can modify your cravings. They say here, "We review several potential mechanisms for microbial control over eating behavior, including microbial influence over reward and satiety pathways, productions of toxins that alter mood, changes to receptors, including taste receptors, and hijacking of the vagus nerve and the neural axis between the gut and the brain." Wow, is that powerful? That suggests that you're not in charge. But how can you take control? If you modify your diet, if you turn things around and eat sugar, it's going to take some willpower, because those gut bacteria and fungi are craving the sugar, the carbohydrates, the excess fat and junk. But ultimately, you can turn it around. You can change your flora. You can take probiotics. You can alter the craving center that may emanate from not your own brain, but from the bacteria, fungi, and microorganisms that inhabit your body. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Thanks for joining us for this hour. Please stay tuned for the second hour of Intelligent Medicine.